Well, one of the reasons for this book, for Vitamin N, which has 500 ways to connect to nature, is that times have changed. It's not like it was when I was a kid. You know, I used to disappear for hours, for a whole day in the woods. You know, my parents wouldn't know where I was, but my dog did, but my parents didn't. That just doesn't happen very much anymore. And it's largely because of the fear that parents feel of stranger danger and other threats that they perceive. The truth is that there's not as much violence toward children today as there was 30 years ago outside the home in most neighborhoods. Some that's not true. Even so, the constant drumbeat of news coverage, you know, the bad tragedies that do happen, leads us to believe there's a lot more crime out there toward children than there actually is. So regardless of that, parents are going to feel that fear. I felt that fear. My wife did too. So how do we come up with new ways to connect with nature? That's part of the reason for Vitamin N. But other things have changed too. The immersion in electronics in the virtual world didn't exist just, you know, 20 years ago. It didn't exist. Now it's everywhere. And so we have to deal with that reality, not in a way that, you know, I like to think I'm not a Luddite, I'm a Luvite. You know, I actually think that we can, you know, the kind of one of the basic ideas of the nature principle, which is the second of these books, is that the more high tech our lives become, the more nature we need. We have to have nature as a balancing agent for the effects of too much technology in our lives. That's not to say we need to throw the computers out of the schools or anything like that. It's that we need to somehow lobby for balance and have schools, for instance, and homes that really encourage the direct experience in real life to develop all of a child's senses and all of ours too. So there are a lot of other changes that have happened. So Vitamin N recognizes that and then offers ways to deal with those barriers in a constructive way that doesn't just dwell too much in nostalgia.
Well, your book, Vitamin N, does outline, I think, more than 500 ways to actually get outdoors and to really help your family, yourself and your kids by exposing them more to nature. And you do make this accessible for everybody, regardless of where you live and regardless of your financial status. Because for people who live in cities, it's not always easy to get out to the wilderness area. It's not easy to find, you know, woods to go and lose yourself in for the day. Yet there are urban parks. I mean, are all outdoor spaces created equal when you're talking about nature deficit? Does it make a difference whether you're just in your local park or do you really need to lose yourself in the woods?
We really don't know the answer to that, just as we really don't know what the correct dose of vitamin N is. There are studies. There are people who are studying it and trying to figure it out. There's a study out of England that says that we get a good benefit from being in nature, even including urban nature, with just 5 minutes of exposure. But I'm, you know, what I tell parents often who ask this or teachers is that, you know, when it comes to vitamin N, some is better than none and more is better than some. And in terms of comparing nature in an urban area compared to wilderness, in vitamin N, I do talk about wilderness experiences and suggest ways to make that easier and things you can do to accomplish that. But I probably spend more time on nearby nature. That's the nature that even in inner city neighborhoods that are highly dense with people, there is nature there. I mean, the Sierra Club, I think they still do this. They would send volunteers into a inner city neighborhood and put backpacks on kids and go for a 5 mile hike to look for nature. And they always find it. It's a different kind of nature than the ones out beyond the cities, but it's there and it can be found. And so one of the best things, though, I think, and I emphasize this in Vitamin N, is not only looking for and finding nature, but actually creating nature. As strange as that sounds, I think that conservation is no longer enough. Now we're going to have to create nature where we live, work, learn, and play. And when we do that, when kids do that, when parents do that, when organizations do that, that's an investment. That's a hands muddy, feet wet kind of experience that goes deeper, I think, than just going out and looking at nature or just experiencing it, but actually being part of the creation of nature in our cities. I actually believe that cities can become engines of biodiversity and human health. There's a section in Vitamin N about people's yards and gardens, that if we begin to replace some of the Kentucky bluegrass, at least some of that, with native species, you'll be amazed at several things. One is how many birds and butterflies show up you've never seen before, that it can actually bring back butterfly migration routes. And kids can be involved with this, a whole family can. The other thing is I'm looking at my yard right now out the window, and my wife supervised getting that changed into mainly native species. And I can tell you, it looks a lot better than it did when it was a typical yard. It's beautiful. And I'm seeing species show up, California bees I didn't know exist. And the best news is I'll never have to mow again.
We're speaking with Richard Louv, who is the best-selling author of the seminal book, Last Child in the Woods. And about 8 years later, he's written a new book, Vitamin N, N being for nature, which is a guide on how to actually lead a nature-rich life and gives 500 suggestions on how to enrich the health of families and communities by getting outdoors. And he's our guest this morning here at KGNU. We're going to go through some of the suggestions that you offer, Richard. And one of the ones I found really interesting is about sound. And you say that people can be a sound catcher and that sounds in nature are actually a really important part of the experience.
Yeah, and this is part of the, there's a section in the book called High Tech, High Nature Families, that recognizing that technology is part of our lives. There are a lot of suggestions in that section of the book. One of them is to use bookending, as it's called, which is encourage the kids or the class or yourself to use technology before you go out. I mean, learn about the bioregion you're in on the computer or on an app, but then leave the gadget at home and then go out and just use all of your senses. We have, according to science, as many as 30 human senses. They're not talking about five senses anymore. It's really, they've moved along from the limitation of only five senses. So to actually use those senses. And then when you get home, tell the kids it's okay to pull out the computer or pull out the iPhone and look at the digital. And this, by the way, is one of the things I do recommend, that you take a digital camera with you, because you can bring those pictures back and relive the experience. And it's a way to really see. I find that I take digital camera on the trips when I go, and I can really see not only then, you know, I like to say it's amazing what you can see if you look. Well, a camera actually can help you look more, both before and after, during and after you get back from an adventure. But in terms of sound, there's a section, there's a fellow that was really involved with the Rolling Stones, with a whole lot of big rock groups as a sound engineer. And he has several books out, and he tells how to use your own recording equipment. Even a smartphone can be used as recording equipment while you're out on your experience. So again, it's amazing what you can hear if you listen. And if you take, you know, a recording device out with you, you can bring back collections of nature sounds. And, you know, it's a different kind of hunting and gathering, but it still activates that gene that we all have.
You talk a lot about bringing nature into the home, so not just getting outdoors, but also having nature as part of your indoor environment through sound, as you were outlining there, but also through art, and to encourage kids to, say, make seasonal decorations from items that they found in nature, or to make artwork from things that they found in nature as well. Why is that important to have that connection back in the home?
I think, you know, in that section of the book, I talk about the nature-rich home, and that the home itself, as well as the yard and or whatever property you have, or even if you don't have a yard, a window box, if it's an inner city neighborhood, the home can become restorative by having more nature in it. There's a new idea in architecture and design called biophilic design. And that incorporates nature around and inside a building. And it can be a workplace, for instance. The studies of workplaces that have been designed through biophilic design show that the workers are more productive. The sick time goes down, turnover gets better. The same can be true at a school. Same can be true at home. That having more nature around, whether it's real nature or symbolic nature, actually, according to the studies, has a restorative effect on our neurological pathways in our brains. It can have a restorative effect physically, emotionally, psychologically. And so the more we incorporate nature into where we live, we will achieve some of the healing benefits, the restorative benefits of nature. And that can be, again, as you say, that can be symbolic through creating art out of nature that we bring back from a hike, leaves, et cetera. But it can also be real nature. For instance, hanging gardens inside walls that are covered with plants that hang outside the home, inside the home, having more plants, having a view so that you make sure that if you design a new home, for instance, situate it so that you can actually see nature. I mean, the old school of thought was what mattered most was curb appeal. Well, maybe what really matters most is view appeal, whether you can look out and see some nature. And that has an effect on you. It is restorative.
You actually give examples of that, particularly when it comes to very young children, for crying babies, to take them outside or to even go to a window and look outdoors, that has shown to really be an effective way to calm a baby who's upset.
And I learned that through personal experience, and that's in the very first part of Vitamin N. You know, from the very beginning, I mean, I remember our first son, when he was born, I held him and I took him to a window and showed him his first day. And we looked up at the sky together. I used to take my boys when they were really little up to the park, and we would lie on the grass and look up through the trees and the branches. And we would just lie there. It was very, very special times. And in terms of, I learned this too early on, which is when one of the boys would get out of control in a restaurant, for example, the best thing that we could do is pick up our baby and take the baby outdoors. And I would find a tree and find some bark on that tree and get up really close to it and point at the bark and say, "Look at that." And Jason or Matthew, as babies, their eyes would get really big and they'd get really, really quiet. And they'd look at that bark. They'd look at that tree. It does work.
Richard Louve is the best-selling author of Last Child in the Woods, The Nature Principle. And now his latest book is Vitamin N, 500 Ways to Enrich the Health and Happiness of Your Family and Community and to Combat Nature Deficit Disorder. He's our guest this morning here at KGNU. And Richard, you outline the fact that this is actually happening, that there are groups that are starting, faith-based organizations are weighing in on getting involved in this and how to get people out in nature. Schools, of course, even libraries. We'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But we're also seeing the growth of just groups popping up so families on their own don't have to do this, that there are things called family nature clubs just popping up all around the country.
Well, that's right. The family nature clubs, I think, is a very good sign. And what these are, it's pretty simple. It's kind of like meetup.com, .org or whatever it is, that families band together and you'll have a pool of families that you're a member of. And you can put out the word and say, we're going to the park, our family's going to the park or going to a hiking trail on Saturday. We're going to go for a hike. Anybody want to go with us? And you'll have 2, 3, 5, 10 families at a time. Sometimes, you know, the leader of this family nature club, as they're called, will organize this beforehand. You'll have that experience together. There are now more than 200 of these, well more than 200 of these family nature clubs in the U.S. And many of them have hundreds of families each as members. In San Diego, where I'm from, there's a family nature club that has well over 1,500 families. Now, they don't all show up at the park at the same time, but again, that's a pool of families from which multiple families decide to go outside together and have an adventure. There are advantages to this, obviously. One is fear. Probably it's the number one reason that parents are worried about their kids going outdoors into nature, or even going alone as a family on your own, is fear of strangers. And that is, you know, magnified too much by media, news media and entertainment media, but it's a fact. And so there's, when you go out with other families, there's perceived safety in numbers. That really helps. You don't have to wait for a foundation grant, you know, to start this. You can start your own. As I explain in Vitamin N, I explain how to do this in Vitamin N, but there's also a link that you can download a free toolkit to how to create your own family nature club. And, you know, any kind of family, any kind of economic group can do this, can create these family nature clubs. So that's one way to kind of deal with the fact that things have changed and we have to have new creative ways to connect our families to nature.
Well, you talked about fear and how often families and parents have that fear of letting their kids to just run wild in the woods or at their local park. And for whatever reason, people are fearful of that. We're also scared, it seems, of letting kids climb trees, of getting dirty. And you really advocate, let your child run around barefoot, let them get dirty, let them climb a tree. How do we get past that fear then as a parent?
I learned a really interesting lesson from a child psychologist, a very well-known one in that field, named Joe Frost. And he points out that the number one reason that kids get hurt, break bones, whatever, when they're climbing trees is because they don't have have not developed the upper body strength to hang on to a limb. And it makes common sense. It's obvious that that would be true when you think about it. So his approach, and I talk about this in Vitamin N, it's the name of the title of one of the chapters, is don't cut down the tree, build up the kid. Really look at risk as an opportunity to strengthen, to do things so that your child becomes stronger physically and mentally. You know, when you think about it, if children don't take appropriate, small, kind of manageable risks when they're little, how in the world are they going to deal with real risks when they're teenagers? So risk on its own is not necessarily a bad thing at all. We need risk in our lives. Kids need it. And that's one of the great things about nature, is that it does provide some of that. One of its very attractions to kids and adults is that it's not entirely safe. And we need to deal with that in a manageable way, and it can be done. And there are a lot of ways to do that, which I list in the book.
Well, you talk about the groups like the Family Nature Clubs that are emerging all around the country. But one of the things that you write about that I really liked was libraries, how you can encourage your local library to offer reading spaces outdoors. So what a different experience to read a book sitting under a tree outdoors than being surrounded by four walls.
I think libraries are incredibly important. You know, there is a movement that has emerged in the last decade to get kids outdoors. And it's happening on every level. It's happening at the personal family level, but it's happening on the institutional level too. Libraries, as you say, and faith-based organizations and schools, and we can talk about that in a minute. But libraries, I think, are particularly interesting because libraries exist in every kind of neighborhood, the branch libraries. And they can actually become centers for bioregional awareness and information. A bioregion is the ecological region each of us lives in, and they're all different. They all have unique qualities and their own flora and fauna. And so libraries could be places where you learn about where you live, not just lions and tigers in Africa, but the actual neighborhood, the actual region in which you live. You can learn more. Libraries can provide more books about that, more videos about that, but they can even go farther. There's libraries in, and we call them, by the way, natural libraries. There's natural libraries in Albany, New York, that check out fishing rods. There are libraries that are beginning to check out day packs with local nature guides and binoculars in them that you can actually check out the library and go have an adventure. Libraries can also be convening places that actually encourage parents to come together for a meeting to think about creating a family nature club. Libraries can also bring in experts for lectures on the bioregion in which people live, biologists and naturalists and so forth. So, you know, there are so many things libraries can do, and some of them are very consciously beginning to move in that direction. And it makes sense because libraries, you know, they serve extraordinary service to their communities by becoming community centers. Well, I think they can be nature centers too, in an interesting way. And also around the library, as you say, some of them are creating reading gardens right outside the library. So there's a lot of ways to do that. Schools, as you say, too, there is an emergence of new kinds of schools that are incorporating nature in wonderful new ways. And they're sailing against the wind because many school districts are still canceling recess and longer hours and putting kids behind desks, you know, for taking tests there longer and longer. And that's unfortunate. But there is this counter trend that's out there.
Well, one of those trends is the nature preschools. They have various different names where most of the classes are, in fact, taught outdoors. And you say that really parents and teachers and young people should be aware of the fact that there are many, many careers in nature that could be pursued if people are interested in this. What about some of the careers that you talk about in the book?
Well, I've been kind of campaigning for an expansion of the phrase or concept of green jobs. Too often when we think of green jobs, we think about solar panels and it stops there. But, you know, the landscape architect, the young landscape architect who needed some work that we hired to recreate our yard that I'm looking at right now through the glass of my office, it's mainly native species now. And it's wonderful. I'm seeing butterflies and birds I've never seen before. And the great news is I'll never have to mow again. We hired her. Now she has started a business out of Seattle where she does this for a lot of people, goes in and creates a native plant yard for them. That's a green job. And I think there's going to be a real future in that as people become more aware of these things. But also biophilic architects, people, as I mentioned before, who are actually working as architects to build new kinds of buildings, workplaces and homes. Teachers in nature preschools, but also in elementary and high school. Charter schools are springing up. There's a whole new kind of career potential there for teachers. And I should tell you about the school I just visited that I am very excited about. And it's one of those schools that's really bucking the trend. I was asked to go by CBS News to outside of Atlanta to a school there that said that it had been inspired in part by Last Child in the Woods. And this school is a charter school, elementary school. And it's out in the woods. It's mainly low-income kids that go there. Some are bused in. And all of the classrooms face nature. And you can open the whole front of each classroom when you need to go outside to be connected to nature. The kids spend one-third at least of their time outdoors learning about math and all, you know, science and language skills. On the hiking trails all around the school. They've got gardens there and so forth. The kids at that school, as it turns out, are doing better in academic achievement than the kids in any other school in that big county, Franklin County, in Atlanta, which includes Atlanta. They're doing better academically in terms of their improvement. They also tend to be healthier. And this makes sense because the all-weather schools in Scandinavia, which require kids to go outside and spend time outdoors no matter what kind of weather it is, those kids have fewer colds and less flu. So, you know, I'm so inspired when I see these schools. And they're out there. I mean, I think I just learned about a new one, another one that's somewhere near Denver. I need to learn more about that one. They're out there. And when I go to these schools, I have to confess, my heart hurts a little bit. I wish those schools had been around for my boys.